The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hi, my name is Danny Roth, and this is Everyday Horror. It's a podcast. We watch at least one horror movie for every day in the month of October, and then we talk about it. I didn't go as spooky that time. That just sounded like a weak voice because I'm very tired. Today, I'm joined by Valerie Complex.
Hey, what's up? I'm here to spook you guys out with some horror talk.
Wow.
It'll be interesting. Yeah.
I'm terrified already.
Oh, you should be.
That was it. if it doesn't come across, it's just that I'm dead inside.
Yeah, I'm giving him a very stern werewolf-like look.
Whoa, a werewolf look.
Werewolf.
Oh, okay. I got a lot of friends that love werewolves. I feel like werewolves never get enough
love. They don't get enough good movies. They don't get enough credit. Like, we are due for a good werewolf movie.
I agree. It's been a minute. Yeah, I know the person that's going to do that too. My friend Danny Lohr is going to hook that up.
With Slice? Did he work on Slice?
No, this is like, do you ever go to Forbidden Planet? You ever go to that? So like the person who is usually behind the gaming counter.
Okay.
That is my number one werewolf person. So if there's anybody in this world that is going to make the greatest piece of werewolf fiction, it's them. That's the person. That's who is going to make that happen. Just so you know, when it occurs, when you watch something that is werewolf related, read or whatever it is, and you're like, this is the greatest werewolf thing. You don't even need to check the book. That's who it is.
Well, because we can't leave it at we can't leave Underworld as the peak werewolf.
Oh, of recent times, you can definitely do better than that. See, I tried to get Danny. I said, can we do a story together where it's like a magical girl and a werewolf love story? That's what I want, because it's both transformation stuff, you know. I also just want to see like a werewolf do like the transforming, but instead of it being like painful, it's like a cool like Sailor Moon kind of move, you know.
Do you watch anime?
Some, yeah.
Wolf Children. It's a slice of life, but it's about a werewolf who's in love with this human, and she has were children.
Oh, I would check that out.
It's really cool, bias.
I will check it out because I like werewolves, and but I'm like a big magical girl person. Like that's what I'm about. Like my whole apartment has got magical girl stuff all around. Especially my office is just like packed.
Dope.
Packed. It's like Sailor Moon stuff. I got like Propicas in there. Like, yeah, don't mess around. Like,
yeah, man.
That's it. I was like, I got that Sailor Moon money, so I'm gonna spend it.
Sailor Moon money, so you're gonna spend it to the moon, man.
So yeah, but we're not talking about werewolves today.
No.
I mean, it's good that we talked about it on the front. I'm sure a lot of people will appreciate that.
Yeah.
But you picked a movie. Please, what is the movie? What is the movie?
Night of the Demons, 1988.
Wow. So yeah. We were doing another podcast right before this, mm-hmm. and you revealed a fact about this movie that I feel is sort of like is the starting place, which is it's the first horror movie you ever saw, and you were
5 years old.
5 years old. See, okay. So
you want me to set it up?
Yeah. All right. What's Night of the Demons about?
Night of the Demons is about a bunch of yuppies.
Yeah.
And
that's accurate.
Yeah. And a bunch of yuppies who go to Hall House. Hall House has a history for being haunted because it was built on an Indian burial ground, if I'm not correct. If I'm incorrect, then correct me. But it was built on an Indian burial ground and is haunted by demons. In typical horror trope fashion, the kids decide that it's a great place to have a Halloween party. And shit goes downhill because it's called Night of the Demons. So it is a night of demons, and people
It's
die.
Also a night of boomboxes.
It's a night of boomboxes and other weird things that happen, like dancing to the Ramones and dancing to the Ramones and sticking lipsticks in your left boob.
Well, I just, how many white people do you hang out with? It's very common behavior.
Is that around
the whites?
That's white culture?
Yeah, that is it. Like when people say that there's no such thing as white culture, I say, have you ever seen Night of the Demons?
Night of the
if you like, that's it.
Night of the Demons is, it was,
I'm glad I could like crack it all wide open for people, man, that have been spending a life of confusion. Like,
if you had a checklist in front of you that had horror tropes in front of it, Night of the Demons just checks them all off.
Like, yeah. You know what's interesting to me is that like this movie has, I mean, like, I was going to say has haters. I have one friend who is like the most intense horror person that I've ever met in my life. You go to his house and like, there is not a wall that does not have like VHS bookcases
crazy poster on the wall, because every horror fan has a poster of The Thing.
He's got like cemetery. He's got weird stuff. He's got like Cemetery High and stuff. I mean, this is a dude like who is, he's a particular character. He is, I don't want to rat him out, but like, so this is the dude that runs the, if you go to Forbidden Planet again, boy, I used to work there. That's why these things come up. Like, it's not just that I'm stumping for this joint, but like when Kim's Video closed down,
you dated yourself.
Yeah. Kim's Video is like the place to go.
I used to go there all the time.
That was the spot.
Yeah. I used to get a lot of Hong Kong action flicks from there.
Yeah. So yeah. So this dude was like, his mentality, we had a tiny like DVD section. And when Kim's went out, he was like, someone's got to fill the void. That's just facts. So like he built a much bigger section at the store, like really started to curate it. He's also like a maniac. Like mm-hmm. he makes some there's some jokes that I can't say on this podcast, which he thinks are hilarious. Mm-hmm. He likes to make Jewish jokes at me, like, and I'm like, this is not cool. And he's like, it's
inappropriate.
Fine. Anyway, so like that's this dude, but like he hates Night of the Demons. He says it's a poser movie, which is like in its way also like a real 80s, early 90s term to use. Mm-hmm. I was like, what era?
What's his explanation for that though?
I think he just thinks that it's not like, I don't know why. I guess he just doesn't see it as like as real, which I'm surprised by, and I'll say exactly why. Like, so the dude that directed this movie is Kevin Tenney. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Tenney did like a bunch of stuff, and like he's really well known. He did the Witchboard series. That's him, Witchboard, and of which there are multiple. And he also did another witch movie, and of course this, like, the name of it went out of my head, which is terrible, but like it's a movie that also has Linnea Quigley in it.
Ah, okay.
So if you want to be real slick about it, I don't understand why. Yeah, like I think his mentality was, it's not as gory. It's not as extreme. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels, yeah, like a little bit of everything all rolled into one. Anyway, I know one dude that just thinks that this movie is not legit, which blows my mind because I really happen to like the movie.
But is it supposed to be legit, though? Like, I don't think that was I think the point of Night of the Demons.
Witch Trap, by the way, just so we all know. I looked it up. I did cheat. The name of the other movie is Witch Trap.
Witch Trap.
Witch Trap. Linnea Quigley, it's one of about 20 different films where she gets killed in a shower.
Yeah. That's her brand. That's on brand.
That is very on brand. We'll talk about her more in a minute.
Yeah. And I think that's why I never got scared of it, because it just, I didn't have a problem not taking it seriously, because I don't think it's one of those movies where we're supposed to do that. Have you seen it? Like, you look at it and you're like, wow, they want us to be serious with it. Like, no, like the dialogue is like, it's goofy. Like I was saying last podcast, it's goofy, but it's goofy on a level to where you can't take anything seriously. Unlike the new Halloween, where it's like, there's stuff that's like hard hitting and like real serious, but has moments of levity. This is like a complete joke. It's like,
yeah,
you know, a movie that you show at a Halloween party. Everybody's drunk, everybody's high, and it's like, let's watch something that's going to make us laugh. You put on Night of the Demons.
Yeah, to me, it's like, you know, like if you're looking for something like similar, like if you're trying to like understand what kind of horror movie it is, it's like a Fred Dekker movie. It's like Monster Squad or Night of the Creeps or something like that. You know what I mean? Like something that has got like a lot of humor to it. You know what I mean? That's like, it's got a lot of personality. Like
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. People like love it, but who takes that seriously? You out of your mind if you do that.
I take Killer Clowns from Outer Space very seriously, but only in the sense that they did a new Blu-ray restoration, and I thought, because they had put it out on Blu-ray once before, and I thought it was a huge upgrade. And I take issues of fidelity in the video, the visual and audio sense, I take that very seriously. I'm very tired. Anyway, yeah, otherwise, yeah, the movies are very silly. But like Night of the Demons is, I think it's got good pacing.
Absolutely.
It moves along real quick. Like you get to the house pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. You get to the action pretty fast.
People get possessed real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the makeup effects. Like, I think they look good. So, like, you want to talk about some, like, there's some people in this movie that are, like, they're now, I mean, like, some of them are horror mainstays. Some, at least one of them just, like, kind of played the same character for, like, three movies in a row.
Amelia Kincaid, I think that's her name. She plays Angela. And she was in the three Night of the Demon movies?
Yeah, the original three.
She was all three as Angela. Mm-hmm. And she's sort of become, like, a B-C-list scream queen. And there's your homegirl.
Linnea Quigley. That's my number one. That's my
Linnea
girl.
Linnea Quigley, who...
Love of my life.
I didn't know was like this huge horror maven until you told me the other day and
she's
I started looking.
She is like the one.
And I was like...
Of the, you know, of like, the VHS
Scream
Queens?
On my
queens.
Phone, like scrolling, and it just didn't stop. I was like, it was this chick Benin. But she's like...
All of them.
She is like up there with like Elvira and some of the other... Like, you know, sort of B-movie horrors.
So, yeah, there's so like, for people that may not be aware, there are a lot of VHS-specific Scream Queens, but there are three in particular, and they often did movies together. But like on their own, they're just like really prolific. A lot of people know them. Linnea Quigley is one of them. And then the other two are Brink Stevens and Michelle Bauer. They're like the three big Scream Queens mm-hmm. of the VHS era.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like they're kind of like doing a different thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like they're not like Jamie Lee Curtis. That's a different kind of thing. Sigourney Weaver. That's a different kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like these are the ones where it's like they show up, the blood starts flying, the titties come out. Like
yeah, the underwear's showing. And
yeah. Like yeah, it's
hairs.
The '80s with like it pulled up real
right,
high. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like that's the one.
Those Sears level bras that they have on that always. Yeah. Totally.
So like Linnea Quigley is like. She's the top. She's the top of that. And she loves playing a villain a lot of the time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and I think that was her thing in Night of the Demons, because if you look at her filmography, she plays, like, final girls and people that get killed. But in Night of the Demons, she took a left turn and was like, I want to play a demon, too. I want to play a bad guy. And
she got the taste of it. Like, she's in a movie called Return of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she gets devoured by zombies and then, like, emerges... as a naked zombie.
Yeah.
And I think like, cause that's not a big part of the movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's towards the end mm-hmm. that they get to that part. And I feel like she did that and she was like,
I'm
cool.
I could be
evil all the time.
Yeah. She was all in it. And I'm looking like now at her filmography, she's even in stuff this year and next year.
Oh yeah. She'd never stop. She will literally never ever.
She has a career that is like.
When she dead in the ground, then I guess. But like, I think honestly, they'll just like dig her up or like, she'll never be in the ground.
They'll just, okay.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Cause she has her
cemetery
filmography
with an S.
goes all the way back to 1975. Like that's how long she's been in horror movies. And in these times, like, I don't think she has some comedies here and there, but she's been in it for the long haul. She deserves respect. And in this movie, I mean, goofy, but it worked. Like, her chemistry with Amelia Kincaid is there. I don't know. It's just something about the cast. They seem to get along really well.
Yeah, they were having a good time.
Yeah, you could just tell.
So you watched it when you were five.
Yeah.
What was, did you like remember the, like, did it stay with you, that experience?
It did. It's always stayed with me. And it actually, Night of the Demons, every time people want to know what my top five movies of all time are, and Night of the Demons is in it.
Wow.
Because it has.
Like just straight up all time.
All time.
Period. All movies.
Of all movies that I've seen. It's like in my top five because I have an emotional attachment to it. One, because it was one of the first horror movies that I had ever seen. And two, because it's one of the first times that I could recall back to a black character surviving.
Oh, that's true.
What was his name? Roger.
Alvin Alexis.
Yeah.
I was ready. I had it up.
He was so good in the role. Like, he just, his character just made me laugh. And, you know, it's not intentional laughter. I'm not supposed to be laughing, but he was one of the first to survive that I remember. And I was like, you know, yeah, you have Dawn of the Dead, but for me, he was one of the first that I remember. And just the way he always sought for survival was something that stuck with me. So even to this day, I'm like, I'll go to bat for Night of the Demons. So like, it's just one of those movies. I'm like, it's from my childhood. I remember, you know, dialogue from it. And so, yeah, I really, I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know what it is about it. Like,
did you watch any of the sequels?
Unfortunately, yes. I've seen all of them, and none of them can compare. I even saw the remake, the one with Ed Furlong.
Oh yeah, the 2009 one.
Yeah,
here's one thing I will say about the 2009 one, and I'm sure there'll be other things to say. My favorite thing about that movie, so in the original, when you meet Linnea Quigley, you meet that ass, like, mm-hmm. That's it. Like, it's like the panty shot. Like, that's basically that where
first,
it starts.
That's the first thing that pops up when you see Linnea Quigley. You see Amelia Kincaid,
she's just moving
walking around, and then you see Linnea bent over. Like, that's the first.
So they could steal stuff, which is good.
That is like the very first shot I love of her that. In that movie is she her bent over.
Yeah. So like in 2009, like they got kids going to the door to get like treats or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, candy. And like, here's this old lady bent over with the panties out, and it's Linnea Quigley still doing it. And I was like, I love you, a true queen. Like,
she's like, I'm gonna stay on brand. I'm gonna bring all the originalness back to the sequel. I mean, the sequel's terrible. It's not.
Well, the number part two. This is what I remember. Like, this really says something about me. There's only one thing I remember about part two.
Same.
Wait, what is your thing?
If I'm correct, there's a part where, like, I think, I don't know if this is part two or part three, but I remember there's a part where some guy is going to, like, reach for Angela's breast, but her chest opens up and, like, cuts the hand off.
Oh, they ripped that off from something else. That's like straight out of Mausoleum. Wow.
I don't know, but I feel like I remember the chest opens up, like bites his hand or like takes his arm or whatever.
Like, yeah, that's like straight up. Like, that's like Mausoleum, the thing. Like, I mean, that's cool. No, the number one thing I remember is a girl gets possessed in two, and the way that it happens is she goes to the bathroom, she opens the mirror, mm-hmm. like the medicine cabinet, and there's a little lipstick tube. And there's a thing inside of it. Instead of it being like regular lipstick, it's like a weird looking like long worm thing that comes out. And she panics. She falls over. And the thing comes out of the tube and it climbs up her leg and it goes inside of her in a vaginal way. And then one assumes it's certainly what is suggested. And then she has an orgasm and she's evil. That's what I remember. That is why, because I watched that and I was like, wow, not only did y'all really do that, but this is on basic cable. Like, here it is. Like, you'd think that this would get cut out. This is questionable content.
No, this is quite, no.
And yet, it's still, and like, I watched it and I was like.
Nah, I don't remember the sequels very much. I barely remember the 2009 one, but I can remember 1988. And I remember there's a scene that's similar in that one where, Linnea Kincaid's character. I keep forgetting the character's name.
Wait, Linnea Quigley or...
Linnea, sorry. I'm getting the names confused, man. I'm hungry and I'm sorry. But Suzanne, that was the name of her character.
Okay.
And Suzanne is like about to put on lipstick, but the air, like the spirit or whatever goes like into her mouth and she's like possessed and stuff at the party.
Yeah, and then it just gets to real weird.
Yeah, and then that's when she starts to kiss Angela and then Angela gets possessed. I don't know how... Even though Suzanne was possessed first, how Angela became...
Oh, why she's like the
leader.
The leader, yeah. Yeah, this is why I like Linnea Quigley is because like they just have her do some weird shit.
Like she just does, like she's like, down she, for like, whatever. She's, yeah, like,
she takes the lipstick out. She's drawn like a heart on her face. her hair is just doing some wild things. Like the whole scene is like
it's so crazy. Like, so she's drawing on her, she's drawing, and I mean, you could tell it's like a, you know, like a thing.
Oh, a breastplate.
Like a breastplate, it's not, or whatever. Real. Yeah. And you could, it looks so obvious, like they didn't even try, but she's drawing
really,
on her
even
face.
When you were five, like when I was five, if I was five when I saw it, because I don't think I was a lot older than that. Like I was maybe 10. I definitely was like, what?
No.
Because she takes the lipstick and she just puts it right in the nipple.
Yeah, she just puts
she just put it in her breast.
And like, it just goes in. Not only did she like put the lipstick in her nipple, like she stuck her finger all the way in.
Oh, yeah, the whole way in, the whole way in.
And it was just like, after she drew on herself, I was like, okay. I don't remember what my reaction was at five, but when I watched it for the first time after a while, I was just like, wow, what the hell were they thinking? But it's an iconic moment in the film. And I'm just like, so this actress was just down to do whatever. And I think that that's another thing that's on brand for Linnea. She's just like, whatever, you know, whatever works. You know, she always looks like she's having a good time. So, and I think that's what's important to her, at least, is that she likes the material and has a good time.
Yeah,
so I can dig
yeah.
that.
Again, just to make it very clear, like it's just this is the much ballyhooed and sought after white culture that people want to know about.
But the thing about
that's
also,
what it is. Like this is just like whenever you see that, you go like, oh, hashtag white culture.
But see, another great thing about Night of the Demons is like the cast was actually kind of diverse.
Yeah.
It was weird because it had like a lot of females.
That's true.
It had Asian character in it, which was like for a horror of that time. What? Like Asian people, it was like, so there was Jill Terashita played Franny. There is the guy that played Sal, who I think it may be of Latin descent. So it was like a diverse cast, like inadvertently. Yeah, they all died, but it was like...
Yeah, well, not a lot of people make it to the end of that.
It was iconic to see this diverse cast. And then at the end to see a woman, a final girl, and a black guy survive the night. It was just wow. And then at the end with the old lady serving her husband the pie with the raisins in it. You know, I had no idea what to do with those leftover apples. And then you see the raisins. I was like, man, this is iconic.
So, it's definitely a Halloween. This is definitely a Halloween movie.
It is a Halloween movie.
Like genuinely, like if it's Halloween time, you know, like if you're having a Halloween party, like you need something to be on in the background. Like this is definitely
like
one of those.
If I had a projector and a screen and I was having a party, I would just let that play for the 90-minute runtime. And I remember, like, you know, I usually go over to my friend's house in Prospect Park and we'll play some board games and then we'll watch bad movies. That's our thing. And that was one of the first that I showed them. And they were like, wow, that was actually pretty good. I'm like, I know, right? So it's just, I don't know. There's so much to unpack with that film, at least for me. And so, you know, the sequels just don't hold a candle to it. Even the remake was like, whatever, you know.
Well, not everybody can have sequels that are even better than the originals. Not everything can be a Sleepaway Camp, you know.
Right.
Sleepaway Camp, by the way. Sleepaway Camp 3, does the actress that plays Fanny is in Sleepaway Camp 3. I just looked it up.
Really?
Yeah, you want to have the support? Here's a picture of her, like, literally in Sleepaway Camp. Now you're not going to see because it's a podcast,
wow.
But you can verify. She got some big hair. She got a leather jacket.
Wow.
She looks like a player. Like, I like her in this.
See, I got to revisit the Sleepaway Camp.
Sleepaway Camp movies
are great. The first one was like, what? Like, I saw the first one, I was like, 10 or 11, and it was like, what the heck? Like,
well, yes, it's got that
ending. The reveal at the end was like, this is very serious. Like,
I'm gonna lay a claim. A lot of people don't like the first Sleepaway Camp specifically because they're like, this is kind of transphobic. Legit, a fair assessment. Mm-hmm. But here's what I could tell you about the two sequels. So the original actress that played the part left, but then like Bruce Springsteen's sister came in and took that part up. And what happens is, like, they send her to, like, a doctor, and then she gets, like, the quote, operation. So, like, my meaning at that point is, like, oh, so, like, she, you know, she wanted to be a woman. Mm-hmm. And then from that point onward, like, she's just out here being like, all these cisgender people are very spoiled, mm-hmm. living a good life, and they were nasty to me when I was just trying to get mine, mm-hmm. so I'm just going to kill them. And I'm like, so this is actually a transgender revenge fantasy, and people just didn't realize it. Like,
that's deep.
So my position is that, like, they, by accident, because definitely nobody did this on purpose, right. There's no way. But my viewing of it is that, like, it's kind of like weird, oddly transploitation in a way that is like a weird revenge fantasy. Like, I think there's a way that if you're willing to take that journey, there is a way, I think, to enjoy it on a very weird level. But also the deaths are very good, and I think that that's a very good in Night of the Demons too. I think that's like another thing that like the movie definitely has going for itself is like when people die, it's like fun, gruesome.
Yeah. when, for example, they didn't really take it seriously. Like, for example, when the character Sal dies, he goes off the ledge with Angela and then he gets impaled by a piece of wood. And then it has a headstone that came out of nowhere and it says,
"Oh yeah,
Sal died tonight." And I was like, that's a lot. I'm like, that's funny. Or like, you know, when she, I forgot, Stooge, I think that was the character's name.
Oh, the
she,
one that turns into, wait, who's, who turns into the pig?
Stooge.
Okay, that is him, yeah.
Yeah, and she like bites his tongue off.
Oh, yeah.
And she like spits it out and starts laughing, and I'm like laughing with her. I'm like, this is freaking, or like one of my favorite parts of the film is when Sal comes in and he's like, Angela, you know, what's up, you know, what's happening? I'm about to leave the party. And then she turns around and she's like, oh, there you are. I was just warming my hands in the fire. And our hands are on fire. And he's like, what the heck is going on? He starts running. Like, it's just stuff like that. Like, the not even the deaths are supposed to be taken seriously in this movie. Like, it doesn't take itself seriously. And I think that's one of the things that is refreshing about Night of the Demons is that it plays with itself. And sometimes it's cool for a movie to do that.
I agree. I mean, I have mentioned this very rarely in the course of doing this podcast because so many of the movies that get talked about are a very serious.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered a lot of films designed to be social commentary or ones that like you watch them now and like you just get like real depressed.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, man, things are better or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, Night of the Demons, like, I just watch it and I'm like, 30 years later, this is good.
It still holds up. Still holds up to its, you know, corny, you know, goofy self. It's not really designed to be scary, although it might scare a young child, but it's not something that you watch and you're like, oh my God, I can't sleep tonight. Like, no, you see the little monster puppets moving around and stuff. It's not scary at all. I'm pretty sure the movie cost like less than $1 million to make.
$1.2 million. I was on it. Once again,
really?
I was ready for you.
$1.2 million?
$1.2 million.
I'm shocked.
Is how much they spent. Here's an interesting fact. So, you know, we were talking about Linnea Quigley and the breastplate.
Right.
So the dude that made that, Steve Johnson, she married him. Like, they didn't stay married, but, like, they did get married.
Wow.
That's the thing that happened.
Yeah, that's the thing that he was like, wow, I'm really turned on by you putting that lipstick in there. Let's go jump the broom.
Well, she must have been into it, too.
Yeah, like, I know.
That's a fetish was born.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a star was born? Like,
a
it's the same thing.
Is born.
Yeah.
And I you know, 1.2, I'm still stuck on the 1.2 million. Like, I can't, I'm shocked. Where did all the money go? Probably to the special effects. Because I can't imagine the actors being paid a lot.
No, I doubt it. I doubt it. Although, the choreographer on this movie? This is so weird. I just like looking stuff up and finding things out. It says, Rue McClanahan from Golden Girls visited the set. Because she had a connection.
What?
Rue McClanahan. You know what? That makes me just like, they should have made Night of the Demons Golden Girls a dish. Like a one-off episode, like Bea Arthur, like doing the ballet dance into the boombox. Like,
now I'm starting to wonder if Linnea Quigley was on an episode of the Golden Girls.
Like, oh, I wonder if she was, but like, she's like the Betty White of Scream Queens.
I think that that's a good analogy. Or a good connection there. I like that.
And
I think,
out.
Wow, she visited the set just to hang out with the cast. They must have been fangirling, fanboying out over her visiting the set.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, like, here's a fact. There's not a person on this earth that does not like the Golden Girls. That is, like, can you imagine a human being being like, nah, not into, are you not into Golden Girls?
I am. No, I know people that haven't seen it.
Yeah, but, like, that's different.
That's different, yeah.
I'm saying, like, someone who watched the Golden Girls and was like, nah. You'd be like, that's like saying, like, I don't like joy.
I don't like happiness.
Yeah, you know, like I don't want to, like, Kermit singing Rainbow Connection. Nah.
And it was like, her being, you know, much older than the cast, but they had to know who she was and be like.
1988, she was like hella famous at that point.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
people
yeah.
definitely knew.
She visited the set. That's wild.
Let's see. This film is the inspiration for horror thrash metal band Hull House. There is a thrash metal band called Hull House. That's amazing. So they have inspired a band.
I don't even know how to react to that, to be honest.
I mean, that seems real. I mean, did you know Linnea Quigley was in a band?
I did not.
She was. She was in a band. I'm going to look up the name of it real quick, and we'll just act.
Was she
like,
in like a Fleetwood Mac cover band?
No. They were called the Skirts, because of course they were. They did a song in another movie she was in called Santa Monica Boulevard mm-hmm. Boys, which is about she's dating a guy, but like he leaves her for another man, and she gets upset about it. That's what it's about, like that she like keeps getting attracted to gay men that like kind of date her at first, but then are like, nope, I'm gay.
Yeah.
And I was like, this feels like it's probably based on real life, to be honest. I bet that happened to Linnea Quigley a lot. Like, no shade, but I could see how that would happen to Linnea. Like, because the thing is, like, I really like, I like Linnea Quigley a lot. I would definitely want to be friends with Linnea Quigley. Like, if something happened, I would not be like, oh no. But like, but also, like, if a very hot man came around, I might be like, bye.
Bye.
See ya. Like, I don't know. Like, I could definitely, no shade to Linnea Quigley. I could see that happening.
Like, I'm reading some things now, and it says, like, Linnea Quigley had to come in and practice eye gouging?
Yeah, that sounds normal. Like, if somebody came in and you got to, like, gouge some eyes, you could just do it on command?
But that scene,
what does that say about
that
you?
That scene, though, is like, it's not like, it's like she's doing like a judo move and trying to, like, he's just there and she just like puts her thumbs in his eyeball. You have to practice that? That's weird. I mean, okay.
She's taking it very, look, she's very serious about her craft.
Yeah. Okay, man. That's what they blew the $1.2 million budget on, having her come in and practice that. Like,
she's an artiste.
I guess.
You didn't know. You didn't know that, but I did. Legitimately, if you look up Sci-Fi Wire on YouTube and you type in her name, you'll get a very long ass video that is narrated by me.
Wow.
Talking about this woman.
Really?
I am dedicated.
I gotta check this video out. I you have sold me on her, and now I'm like an even bigger fan, because I was, you know, I just knew her from Night of Demons, and I'm like, this actress is wild, so I need to, you know, I like the movie, but I never, you know, thought about seeking out more, but now I do. Now that your passion and enthusiasm has propelled me to want to know more.
Yeah.
So you should pat yourself on the back for that.
Thank you. I've become very effervescent, jubilant. Yeah. I'm a light in the darkness when I'm talking about Linnea Quigley, but that's the only time.
And she still looks
Like, I mean, to me, she looks like herself.
Yeah, she kind of, and she looks good. 100%. And she looks the same, but I'm pretty sure, like, in Night of the Demons, she was a lot older. Like, I was looking and I was like, they can't be serious with this lady who looks like she's 40.
Oh.
I was like, she looks 40.
No, I don't think it's that bad.
She had to be in her 40s.
Again, I don't. Well, hold on. No, I don't know that. I know that that is not correct. I'm going to verify her age, and when it's done, we're going to just say the thing.
Like, okay, she was born in 1958.
So she was like 30. She was 30, dude. 40 again. Sorry. Hashtag white culture.
Sorry.
Is just looking old.
I feel that's another
big part. Just another big part of white culture is being old. Sorry to report. I like right now the producer the page is recording, keeping an eye on the podcast. This is like nodding because he also knows that that's a fact.
See,
if there's one thing that we know to be true,
it's that
white culture is aging a lot quicker than everybody else.
But the thing
else is
like I think I don't know.
Like
I don't think
milk.
Yep, said like milk. The expiration date is like 2 days away.
Yep, sorry.
No.
To myself.
You better watch out, Danny.
No, it's
too late.
You
better watch out.
It's too late. I told you. Two years of Trump presidency, I had a full ass head of hair. Like, I aged 20 years in 2 years.
Man.
Like, that's the horror movie of my life. anyway, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
But wait, with the movie, so you watched it with your dad when you were five.
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all watch like other horror movies? Was that like a one-off?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No.
What are the movies that he introduced you to?
He made sure that I got my fill. We watched Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, wow.
Which was pretty scary to me at the time.
I watched Evil Dead 2 with my dad. That was our big.
That was your thing.
That one and Troll 2, which is not a good movie. That's a terrible movie, but we saw that one together.
Is another big, huge one from my childhood.
The Gate got a Blu-ray release through Vestron Video a couple years back. Pretty good.
I'm waiting until the steel version comes out, which it will. But The Gate is another, like Night of the Demons, The Gate is a big one from my childhood. So The Gate, House was another one.
There you go. That's the one that comes up. That movie comes up. We were talking about the very first episode we released of this. We talked about the Japanese movie Houseu, but I was like, oh, I wonder if the House movies were influenced by it because they are also like kind of funny and like weird, real weird and stuff. Like, man, so you like, I think it would be safe to say that you like horror movies where like they make people look crazy. They like give them the weird demon makeup because like that's like House movies got that. Night of the Demons movies got that. Freddy Krueger got that.
I like them all. Like I like all horror movies, but growing up, that was what I watched. And like Dario Argento was a big thing in our house. So I saw Demons.
You're watching like Suspiria and stuff? Wow. That's a very different sort of movie, though.
Yeah, that was when it was like, my dad was like, you need to graduate.
Ooh.
He was like, here's Demon.
That's hard for
grown-ups. I was like, okay, this is like, whatever. And then he showed me Suspiria, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that's
I was like, I like this.
That's for adults.
I was like, show me this. I'm shivering. I want more.
So you're going to watch the remake?
Yeah, definitely. I didn't get an invite to the early screenings, but I don't know.
That doesn't happen to me. I don't ever get invited to anything. No, not me.
You got to start. Got to start getting you invited.
It's never going to happen to me.
But I think I'm interested and I want to check it out. It looks good. A lot of people say it's very different from Dario Argento's version, but it's cool. Like I like that you know when it's a remake, you got to add the different elements, add your own bit of style, whatever. But I liked like Candyman is another one I saw when I got a little bit older.
The original one, the first one. I saw the sequel in the Paramus triplex, and I made out with a girl in that movie. That was the first time I ever made out with a girl. Candyman, Farewell to the Flesh.
Did y'all sit in the front row or in the back?
No, hell no. We were in the back.
Yeah.
That's where you go.
But I like to be daring, so I just sit in the front. Yeah, because I like to cause pandemonium wherever I go. And that was one of the things.
Yeah, you make out
in the front row, man.
I just remember her first name was Anita. And they were like, oh, is her last name Man? Like, Anita Man, any man will do because she kissed you. And I was like, wow, came for me. Like, high school was a tough time.
But Farewell to the Flesh wasn't bad.
I mean, when you watch them back to back, it's pretty bad.
I mean, they're all bad.
Because the first one is, I mean, I like the first one.
I revisited the first one about a year or two ago and I was like, wow, this is shit.
Tony Todd's in it. Like, Tony Todd is never shit.
No, he's not. He's good. It's just, you look at certain implications and you look at just the storyline, and I was just like, this is just not good. I was like, this is not good. But, you know, that's, you know, as you get older, you realize certain films don't have that impact that they did when you were a kid.
Yeah, that's true.
You saw them differently. Like, Candyman scared me for years because it was urban horror. Which is something that I could connect to. I came from an urban area. And as we have those urban legends out there. And it was like, okay, so this is very real, you know, because Cabrini Green and all that. It was the ghetto. And it was like, this is very real. So Candyman was one of those ones that stuck with me for a while.
If you're going to make Night of the if you were going to do another remake, if you were going to do it, like it's 2018, I just give you the budget. You're gonna
make 1.2 million?
No, I'm gonna give you like a today's budget. You know what I mean?
Like 1.2 million.
I'll give you more. Hold on. Like how much?
For inflated, what is 1.2 million in 1988?
It's probably a lot more.
Because 1.2 million in 1988 is a lot of money.
Look, here's all I'm saying. Like, just to be very clear, Get Out only required 4.5 million. I'll give you that. How about that? I'll give you 4.5 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You gonna do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, maybe I would give, you know what? I'm just trying to figure out, like, how much money this, because the thing is, like, how much money is this movie going to make? Are you looking to make a movie that makes a lot of money, or are you just looking to make a niche movie? Like, what's the goal?
I think I would be looking to make a niche movie, because, like, when you make niche movies, like Truth or Dare, for example, like, I felt like that was a niche movie that
Truth or Dare, that
got a blockbuster release, like the recent one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. We did an episode on it. Princess Weeks like rolled in and was like, this is a feminist masterpiece. And then we talked about how that's not really true. But it kind of is. But those two girls chose each other over the world in the end. So, you know, like in a way,
Yes.
If you want to be real particular, like
in a way. I agree with that aspect. But the whole film is like, it was a niche movie that got a blockbuster release and failed.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want something like that. I'm pretty sure that the budget for that was like 20 million bucks.
Yeah, you don't need
and
that.
I don't think it made that at all. No. You're about to look up the numbers?
I am. Yeah. And you should keep talking while
I'm curious. But, you know, I would not want excess money.
Oh, wait, no. Cost $3.5 million.
What?
$3.5 million made 95 $95 million.
Truth or Dare.
You know, you can thank the foreign market. Thanks, foreign market. It made more money in other countries than it did here. It only made 41 here. It made 53.5.
Wow.
Total every place else. So, like, we can go through and say, let's see, what country made.
If Truth or Dare could swing that for $3 million,
okay.
I could swing it for three.
Okay.
Right.
$3.5 million.
But I'm so money efficient, I could probably do it in 1.5 something good.
Honestly, this is not going to surprise you. France, it made $5 million. You know where else it almost made $5 million? Germany. That explains everything to me. There's Germans.
I was going to say, I'm not surprised at all. Not at all.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was trying to go through right quick and see, like, but I don't even think it came out in Japan. And, I would think, honestly,
you think they'd be into stuff like that, right?
The thing is, like, they've made stuff like that. And, like, this is, like, straight up feels like a Japanese movie in a number of ways. Anyway, so you're going to make Night of the Demons now, modern day.
Yeah.
Like,
nice budget.
Who are you going to cast?
Distributed on A24.
Oh, okay. It's A24 going to put it out. Yeah. It's a real art house horror.
It's going to be horror.
Very meaningful.
It's going to be, you know, and I don't know who I would cast, but I know we're going to have some of the same aesthetics as far as what the cast look like. And I think that's what we need. We need a little bit of levity. We need that return to, like, and that's what I liked so much about Halloween, is that it felt very, like, when people talk about nostalgia, I got it from Halloween.
Yeah.
And that's what I would want people to feel if I was to remake Night of the Demons.
So a lipstick is definitely going to titty. That's just going
to
happen.
I'm going to have to rework that part. I would have to rework that. But everything else would be pretty, like,
okay.
You know,
that's a controversial statement. That's the thing. That's what the movie's known for.
That's what the movie's known for. That's what people like. But I'd rework that. I wouldn't say I take the lipstick titty thing out. I'm saying I rework it.
Okay.
So,
all right,
you know,
gotta keep them guessing.
Yeah, I like to, like I said, I like to cause pandemonium and keep people on their toes. That's my thing.
Okay,
looking forward to my remake of Night of the Demons coming out 2000. Never.
Cool. No, I want it has to happen now.
Now it has to happen.
We find a way. We'll go down to sci-fi offices. We will get you a sci-fi budget. That's the thing. Like, can you do if we could get you like an asylum budget? Can you do that on Sharknado money?
I can.
Could you do it? Okay, let's make that happen.
I could.
Let's do it.
And Asylum follows me, and the CEO of Asylum follows me.
Oh,
Twitter,
cool. Well, I mean, yeah, you ahead of the curve. Like,
I mean, I'd love to write Asylum. I got plenty of stuff in my head. Like, okay. I've seen way too many Asylum films.
Well, Asylum and sci-fi, like, that's like linked right up. So
yeah,
it could happen.
It could make it work. You gotta hook me up, man.
Okay, I'll do what I can. All right, let's just, we've been talking for a minute, so I would like to say, somebody, like, they listen to this, they watch Night of the Demons, they were like, love that Night of the Demons, agree with all points. What else would they watch? Like, what's another movie?
Ah, man, they would watch They Live.
Oh, all right.
They would watch Trolls. They would watch Demons, Dario Argento. The Gate.
The Gate is a good choice.
They'd watch...
I love The Gate.
The Puppet Master. They'd watch Puppet Master.
Ooh.
They'd watch...
Bringing out those Charles Band Empire movies.
Yeah,
now.
They'd watch Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors.
Oh, yeah. Classic. A real classic.
They'd watch... That was the last time that movie was good. That franchise had a good movie. But,
whoa. I like some of the other ones. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
I know. They would also watch, they'd watch so much. They'd watch The Stuff.
Oh, yeah. The Stuff is so good.
Yeah, they'd watch The Stuff, which I watched recently and was like,
that's it. Oh,
but they'd watch it, you know, they'd watch The Stuff.
That's like, again, that's another one that got a good arrow, put a good Blu-ray out.
Yay.
Take that one out. Take that one out right away.
The Stuff. Yeah, that's what they'd watch.
I would put them all on Linnea Quigley movies, just straight up. Like, I'd be like, you watch this, watch Return of the Living Dead, watch Sorority Babes in the Slam Ball Bowl-O-Rama.
Watch Silent Night. What is this?
Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yes.
You could do that. You watch Nightmare Sisters. That's a real corny one that I still like. What else? There's like a million. Maybe you could watch Witch Trap. There you go. Watch. I mean, like, it's nowhere near as good as Night of the Demons, but it's the same director. Also has Linnea Quigley in it, so there you go. You can watch that.
Hooker with a Hacksaw.
Oh.
That came out in 2017.
I would say Chainsaw Hookers, legit. Absolutely watch Chainsaw Hookers. That's a really great movie with Linnea Quigley in it.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I highly recommend that one. That's like, it's kind of got like a bit of like a detective noir quality, mm-hmm. but also Chainsaw Hookers are there. Because it's in the title.
Three Scream Queens.
Oh, that's later. That's later times, and it stars the three. It stars the classic three: Linnea Quigley, Michelle Bauer, and Brink Stevens. But they're also in Sorority Babes in the Slime Ball Ballorama and Nightmare Sisters. And I would sooner say to check out those two.
Mm.
Anyway, all right. So it's a wrap on this episode. Before we go, where can people find you on the internet? Not in person, that would be weird. But where on the internet?
Well, if you find me in person, it's all good. I'll say hi. You know, if you come in peace. If you don't come in peace, then I'll break you to pieces.
Whoa.
I know that's dark, but I just got to go there.
I appreciate the honesty.
Yeah, I got to set up the boundaries.
Thank you,
but anyway, if you find me on Twitter, I am Valerie Complex, all one word, at Twitter, VALERIECOMPLEX. And I'm on Instagram at Valerie_Complex.
All right. And you can find all of my writing on sci-fi.com. You know, if you want to watch like videos like that Linnea Quigley one, it's available to you. A lot of horror videos do I feature, and I script a lot of them.
That.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. If you want to find me on Twitter and Instagram, I am at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N. Ordinary, also with one N. Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. And remember, boys and girls, sometimes the best cure for the horrors of every day is a little everyday horror. We'll see you next time.